Good afternoon. This is BBS Radio. I'm Russ Johnson, and this is LightsInTheNight.org. And what we do is talk about UFO, UAPs, and paranormal. We even talk about people who are doing channeling with psychic or intuitives, because all of that's coming to the fore. Guess what? 2024 is going to be a unique year for disclosure. Not only have you heard about the Pentagon and 60 Minutes, and the New York Times talking about the disclosure of possible alien activity and UFOs on the planet, but there's another spiritual process and development coming along for 2024. And we have Dr. Matthew Silver with us. Now, I've been knowing Dr. Silver as a practicing allopathic physician for many, many, many years. And I've seen him in the trenches as an entrepreneur to earn serious six-figure income, seven-figure incomes even, multiple figures. I've also seen Dr. Silver in the philanthropic arena, especially dealing with spiritual organizations and supporting serious resources worldwide for those organizations. So we have him today to talk about a spiritual awareness. Dr. Silver, great having you on us, with us, if you will, on BBS Radio. So I would like to you talk about your own background. I might have left something out that you want the audience to know, okay, doctor, as being a metaphysician, no. Okay, as an allopathic doctor and a metaphysician.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Johnson. I appreciate the opportunity, and yeah, as you mentioned, you and I do go back a few years, and I have always been a fan of yours because you have been leading the charge in helping to educate, inform, and bring people into a higher level of awareness. Especially with Lights in the Night, it certainly has made its mark, and these are the times that we're living in. People need to have as much awareness as possible. To give you just a little bit more background for the audience, I am a family practice physician. Gosh, it's coming up on, believe it or not, 50 years since I graduated from med school in 1975. But in addition to being a physician in medical practice, I'm winding that down now. I've also been a student of metaphysics and spirituality, so going back also approximately that same length of time, I'm now 72, and I started my journey of exploring universal principles, gosh, in my mid-teenage years. So actually, even before I started studying medicine, I was studying universal principles. So that's why I could call myself a metaphysician, which basically means someone who's gotten some education and enlightenment, or at least some exposure to principles of metaphysics. Meta is simply a term that means above. So metaphysics would be above the physical domain. But like anyone else, I just have read a lot, been exposed to a lot. I don't make any claims of being enlightened. I make a claim of being awake and aware, which is for many people a little different when they think about a physician. They think about a physician as being a scientist, and I am that, but I'm also awake and aware to the fact there's a lot more that's going on in the world and in the universe that is beyond scientific scrutiny. So that's kind of a brief little summary of how I got to where I am and my excitement about being able to share a little bit more about that on the air with your listeners today.
Well, excellent. I really appreciate that. Yeah, the program is really lightsinthenight.org, but you had said something about Lights in the Night 2.0. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, I have a way of reinventing words and phrases sometimes, and I have my way with that. And so when I thought about the way you have named your program, Lights in the Night, and of course, giving extraordinary insight into what is unfolding in the arena of UFOs and all that will entail. And of course, right now, there's a lot more speculation than there is evidence, but the evidence is certainly going to come, and may come in a very dramatic way. So my idea about this is Lights in the Night 2.0. Okay, so it's a little different definition of light and the night. The light, in this case, is helping to enlighten people about how they can be able to process the changes that we are going through, and they are magnanimous changes, and they're accelerating. And in the night means how we can help to bring some enlightenment to the increasing darkness that is just part of the age we're living in. It's a major dichotomy and contrast between people of light and those who are not aligned with light, and they're aligned with darkness. And so things tend to get really dark, but when things are really dark, every light makes so much more difference. So if we can help to enlighten more people in the nature of the darkness that we are having to experience, then we are bringing light in the night. That's the way that came about.
Well, that's a unique title. I like it. What would you say are the fundamental principles that help someone to become more enlightened? And I think, and you referenced 2024, there's going to be a banner year for an explosion of that sort. What do you mean?
Well, there's a convergence of many factors that are coming to a head at the same time. And you probably know that I did a podcast on artificial intelligence back in the summer 2023, and appreciate being able to have that interview with you. So at the same time that AI is progressing into the what we call the singularity of AGI, which means artificial generalized intelligence, this is where the machines, quote-unquote, will become capable of thinking for themselves and educating themselves and creating clones of themselves and being advancing in their intellectual capacity multiple times more intelligent than a human. Now, you and I have kind of gone down that rabbit hole in great detail, so I don't want to go there right now, but I'll just say that life as we know it, and not just the U.S., but in the world in general, is going to change in ways that will be almost unfathomable because of the advances in technology and also the social challenges that are created because of all the division of, you know, the politics division, all economic division, socioeconomic division. All those things are going to come to a head at the same time. And AGI and artificial intelligence is just part of it, but all of the technologies of the day are going to increasingly create the haves and the have-nots. And anytime more people have and less people have not, or more people have not, there's always division, there's always conflict, and of course those can, you know, can result in a lot of social unrest, and certainly, as we are starting to see, wars and rumors of wars. So part of my journey at this point is to help people to gain a perspective that will allow them to deal with the crises and the conflicts that are forthcoming. Even if the mothership lands and these ETs jump off the mothership, well, how many people are going to be ready for that? What are going to be their levels of psychological and emotional well-being to allow them to weather that storm? And that's just one of many things that may be forthcoming. So anyway, just to cut right to the chase, when I think about three fundamental principles for a person to become enlightened, and that simply means awake and aware. It doesn't mean that you have to be a spiritual guru, but you're just more awake and aware. There's three things. There's being emotionally detached, mentally resilient, and spiritually aligned. Again, three fundamental principles: emotional detachment, mental resilience, and spiritual alignment.
Wow, that's a mouthful. So that's a whole program that you've been working on. Would you say? I mean, I know you with another spiritual organization for many, many, many years, international, I suspect. What would I do in terms of developing an emotional detachment to all the stuff that's happening, like in Ukraine and the Gaza Strip and the fight between the Democratic and Republican Party, and on and on and on? How can I emotionally detach from all of that?
Well, I think that this comes down to where do you put the most emphasis in terms of your internal belief system. Now, I don't want to get too far down into, you know, theology and all of that. It's not necessary that we go there. But I want the audience to know that I am grounded very strongly in religious teachings. But I'm also I go well beyond traditional religious teachings, because not all religion is based in spirituality and truth, and not all spirituality and truth is necessarily confined by a religion. So I give honor and recognition to my heritage. My father is a Baptist minister. My grandfather was a Baptist minister. My great-grandfather was a Baptist minister. Actually, two grandfathers, both sides of Baptist ministers, and uncles on both sides. So you know what they say, the apple came far, but so far from the tree. So I do have my orientation being highly aligned with Christian discipline and Christian doctrine. However, I embrace and allow a acceptance and appreciation for all religions that are based in the universal principle of love. Unconditional love is foundational to all world's religions of any great merit. And the reason I bring that up is because if you are comfortable with your religious belief system based in love, based in faith, then you already have a major advantage over those who don't, as far as becoming centered and, relatively speaking, emotionally detached. Now, emotional detachment does not mean that you don't feel, that you're not feeling the angst or feeling the fear or feeling, you know, the anger or frustration with the world as it is. You're going to feel those things, but you're going to be able to come back to a place of centered balance. You may be thrown off center for just a tad, and then you come back, because balance is the name of the game. If you are in the presence of someone who is, relatively speaking, balanced emotionally, even in a worst-case scenario, everything is falling apart around them, but you can just sense that they're centered. They may still have to react. They may have to still, you know, fight fire, but they have a centered place of well-being, and you can sense it. And people gravitate to those types of people. So emotional detachment means that you don't allow your emotions to move you off balance very long. You tend to come back. And you come back because that your center is the place where you have your faith. It's the place where you have your heart consciousness. And that goes into a little bit of the religious understanding, because heart consciousness means that you are aligned with that principle called unconditional love, which is what Jesus taught. In fact, many of the great masters of various religions taught unconditional love. They didn't call themselves Christians or Buddhists or Hindus or whatever. They just called themselves teachers and preachers of unconditional love. And so one of the principles that I tend to share as often as I can, no matter what religion the person is affiliated with, is if you are operating in your heart with heart consciousness and an intention to be loving, then your heart consciousness is reflective of and synonymous with Christ consciousness, because that's what Christ was doing. He was teaching unconditional love. So you can have heart consciousness and not be a Christian. You could be a Buddhist, you could be a Hindu, you can be whatever, but your heart consciousness is the same as Christ consciousness. They are synonymous with each other. So that's one of the key principles, emotional detachment. And let me just reference fear a little bit, because the fear is the big one. Fear is the big boogeyman that captures most people and puts them in a tizzy, no matter what it is, whether it's the ET getting off the mothership or whether it's the IRS coming after your car or your house. If fear is whatever it is, and of course, just being on the streets nowadays, you're going to have some reactivity when people are trying to get what you have or trying to threaten you in some way. So fear is the big one. But unfortunately, many people take fear way beyond what it was designed to do, which is a biological protective mechanism for the fight or flight reaction. So many people now are afraid of just about anything and everybody. So look at the initials F-E-A-R, fear, false evidence appearing real. Now, many people have heard that, but you want to take it to heart, because if you think about the fact that most of the things you are fearful of are not going to happen, then you can realize that you can control your fear, at least rise above it. You may feel it, but you're going to get through it, and you're not going to allow it to control you. So that's the key principle of emotional detachment, being faithful and fearless. Faithful means more full of faith and less fearful. And, you know, in the biblical verse, there is no fear in love, for perfect love casteth out fear. There you have your antidote. Whatever you can do to bring more love to a situation, you will neutralize the fear. Combination of faith and love, fear has no chance.
Okay. You also mentioned mental resilience. What is that about?
Yeah, mental resilience. When I was in med school, one of my foremost teachers, who was an iconic physician, Dr. LaSalle LaFall out of Howard University, he was a doctor's doctor, a mentor's mentor, one of those just extremely well-schooled and great teachers and mentors. I remember his quote. He said, doctors, he's talking to us students, you know, doctors, you must get to the point where you can have equanimity under duress. Equanimity under duress. Now, what does that mean? Well, duress means stress, strain, all of the challenges that a physician has to go through, you know, sleep deprivation and having to be on point no matter what the time of day and how fatigued you are. That's duress. What's equanimity? Equanimity is balance. It's being able to be resilient, so no matter what's going on around you, you can refocus on the task at hand. So the term resilience means you're not allowing anything or anyone to take you off point, to take you away from what needs to get done. Now, in a crisis, and it's funny how it kicks in. I was at a, this is a personal thing. Mm-hmm. I was at a Valentine's Day social event, you know, last month. And, you know, when it's kind of a big, you know, dinner dance thing, and all of a sudden, a couple tables away, a lady passes out on the floor and starts to have a seizure. Well, guess what? I just went into doctor mode. I didn't worry about who was there and what needed to be done. I was going to make sure somebody called 911. And I just got down and helped the lady to get through the crisis. So I guess you can call that resilient, but what it means, you take your skill set and you use it whenever you need to for whatever reason. Not everybody's going to be a doctor, but whatever your capabilities are based upon your training, your intellect, your skill set, be prepared to put it to use, no matter what's going on around you. So the world is going to need a lot of people who are able to deal in stressful situations in a non-stressful way. Again, dealing in stressful situations in a non-stressful way. So that's what I think mental resilience is calling for. And what these things go hand in hand. So if you are emotionally detached, meaning your emotions aren't jerking you back and forth, it's a lot easier to remember what you need to do. So I'm at this event. What happens if I get fearful about, oh, my God, is she going to make it? No, I just went into doing what I needed to do to make sure that she was taken care of until the emergency crew got there. So it's a simple principle, but simple and easy are not necessarily the same thing. But if you know that you have a problem, staying focused, then that's where you want to put more attention to gain more skill set in mental resilience, which of course is very much closely aligned with emotional detachment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you did mention spiritual alignment. What specific alignment are you talking about? The love focus that people should have, all love in their hearts and no hate or resistance.
Yeah, that is part of it. Now let's be real. We're living in a world where it ain't easy to love anybody, let alone somebody who's trying to take your money or coming after you in some way.
And then we have, yeah.
we have all the dichotomies, the contrast, the polarities, the division. And, you know, Christ said, turn the other cheek. Well, that's easy to say if you have reached that level of heart consciousness. Most of us have not gotten there. But the spiritual alignment simply means this. There are universal principles of truth that predate all of us and predate many of the world's religions. Those religions were founded on the principles of truth that were already pre-existent. And listen, everyone has a conscience. At some level, in your heart of hearts, you know what's right and you know what's wrong in terms of your activities. Now, you can override it. You can learn how to lie. You can learn how to cheat. You can learn how to take and steal. But you are then moving against your innate consciousness, which is your spiritual alignment with that capital T, which is capital I. Now, it doesn't really matter what you call the supreme being, whether you call it God or source or higher self. It doesn't really matter. It is what it is. It doesn't care what you call it, but it is definitely honored by your honoring it, because spirit always exists in reciprocity. To give more is to receive more. You cannot outgive the universe. So it's very simple. Most of us are brought up in the church, and we know some of the principles of what it means to be a good Christian or a good Hindu or a good Muslim. Well, guess what? That's spiritual alignment. Now, you can, by choice, decide to be less aligned for whatever purposes, greed or selfishness or self-centeredness or lust or whatever. You've been choosing to be less aligned. But guess what? That comes with a cost. There's no free lunch. What goes around comes around, whether you want to call it just the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that Shakespeare talked about, or you want to talk about the law of karma. As you sow, so shall you reap. This is not rocket science. It is what it is. So I'm encouraging people, when you talk about spiritual alignment, don't get too complex. You were taught this at your mother's knee one way or another. You went to church, or you went to Bible study, or you did whatever, Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, whatever. You learn principles of honor and integrity. The more you can stay in integrity and honor, guess what? Your life's going to work better.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the Generation X or Generation Z or whatever you want to call them, they didn't come from that solid sense of spiritual development, you know, the Baptist or the Catholic or Protestant or Episcopal Church realm. Many of the youth of the day don't even bother going to church. I mean, they resist and reject anything that's in that whole arena, so to speak. What kind of answer would you have for them when they're dealing with stress and conflict?
Yeah, so now what we're finding is that there is a spiritual void and a religious lack of understanding or lack of exposure. We can't blame a person for not being religious if they weren't taught religion at mother's knee, or at least taught principles of religion, whether they were, you know, giving themselves the name of a Christian or Hindu or Muslim. But, you know, they may not claim to believe in a higher power because they weren't taught or they didn't study, or they didn't go into a place of inner meditation and contemplation. But there is an old saying which has great truth, and that is, there are no atheists in foxholes. Now, what does that mean? When things go south, and you're dealing with a life-threatening situation, you will hear people who don't go to church say, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. They start going into a prayerful mode. And even though you may take those words lightly, they understand this is the time where I need to depend on something higher than me. And I remember the great quote by Abraham Lincoln. He said, I was often driven to my knees because I had no place else to go. So, and that's one of the greatest presidents of our history, of course. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to be said for humility. Now, I want to touch on humility because this is a big one. there's a lot of people who put a lot of time and emphasis into how great they are, not how great thou art, but how great they are. And so they get full of themselves, and then they're making a big income. They got the nice car. They got the big house. They got the big bank account. And so they kind of get full of themselves. But another biblical verse I never forgot is, pride goeth before a fall. If you get too full of yourself and you're no longer operating in humility, then watch out, because there's something that's going to come at some point in time and teach you a lesson that only humility can teach you. You could be humbled, and sometimes you're humbled because you're humiliated. They go hand in hand. So anyway, that's another idea, that stay humble. One of my favorite words from one of my spiritual teachings was, be humble and see that you are filled with the simplicity of love.
I got that. Okay.
Well, that's deep now.
Yeah. I hear you loud and clear.
That's deep.
So you seem to be working feverishly with a concerted effort of constant improvement. Can we go just a little bit over your religious and metaphysical journey and where you are in that journey today?
Oh, sure. And this is really good for me to share this with this audience. And by the way, I'm going to have a couple of special offerings to give toward the end of this, a couple of readings, not of my own creation, but things I have found that have been part of my journey that I think will be helpful for everybody. So, yeah, in my mid-teenage years, I asked two existential questions, which most people have asked one point or another in their life. Whether they voiced it or not, they ask these questions. Number one question is, who am I? Not what is my name, but who am I in my entirety? My spiritual nature. Who am I? I'm not just the guy who looks in the mirror and calls himself Dr. Matt Silver or whatever the nickname is. I'm something else. I'm something that preexisted that name. It preexisted that incarnation. Now, I do believe very strongly in reincarnation. Not everybody does. But just to look in the mirror and say, who am I, is to go to the core of what it means to bring yourself in alignment with a universal ideation of existence. I don't think I've ever said that before.
I see.
Bring yourself into alignment with a universal ideation, meaning idea of what it means to exist, to be. I think of Shakespeare, to be or not to be, that is the question. So that's a part of it. And then the other part of it is, being willing to say you don't know, and then ask for help, ask for guidance. Another Christ, teaching of Christ, ask and it shall be given. Now, if you don't ask, ain't nobody going to throw something out and jam something down your throat. You have to ask, and that's coming from humility. Okay, so long and short, in my mid-teenage years, I started looking into some of the principles of universality and universal principles of truth, and originally started looking at the Rosicrucian group. Many of you have heard of that. Then later on, transcendental meditation for quite a few years. And then yoga, both the Hatha yoga, which is the exercises, but also Raja yoga, which is more of the principles of meditation, contemplation, and prayer. And then from there, in the mid-70s, I became a member of an organization called Ekankar. They called the Path of Total Awareness. And at the same time, I'm still embracing my spiritual underpinnings because, again, I'm a pastor's son, and I never divorced myself from the church. I just said, okay, is there more to the story than that? That's where I led to my path. That path led me to a higher understanding and teaching. And incidentally, the further progression of that, going back to 2003 now, was when I joined a universal mystery school called the Way of Truth, the Way of Truth. And that has taken me to the area of understanding everything that I thought I knew. Some of it I had to keep, some of it I had to give away, or at least go past. and then an abundance of universal principles, understanding, and awareness that I had no idea was part of the equation of universal progression into enlightenment. Now, I don't claim to be enlightened. I'm just saying I am a much more enlightened person than I was as a teenager back in the, you know, in the 60s. So my journey is my journey, and everyone else's journey is their journey. There is no one path for everyone. Some people will stay in a particular religious understanding from day one, from their youth, all the way through old age and passing on. That's their journey, and if they are comfortable there, there's no reason to look further or higher or just different. You just stay where you are because that's where you're comfortable. Others, such as myself, make an inquiry. There's got to be more. I want to know more. What's out there that's not being taught? And so that led asking, you should be given. So that led to any number of different explorations by books and literature, in addition to some very powerful, you know, experiences, because prayer, meditation, contemplation all lead to inner experiences that will confirm that you're on the right path for you, the right path for you. Now, this is one thing I feel very strongly about. You can read all you want. You can listen to all the great voices of ministry and go to church every Sunday and, you know, have chapter and verse quoted. But this is something I have come to realize without a shadow of a doubt. You must do your inner work. You must be prayerful. You must be aligned with prayerful truths. You go within or you go without.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You have to silence is important because that's where God connects with you. The truth of God awareness comes in silence, not in speaking or being prolific with your words and your prayerfulness. No, no. Can you get quiet? Can you put your mind still? Can you be still and know that I am God?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These words are very simple, but they're very powerful. Be still. Be still and know. Meditation, prayer, contemplation. There's slight variations on each one of those terms, so I'm not trying to lump them all together. Prayer is different from meditation. Meditation is different from contemplation. And silent stillness is the goal for each of those. Because when you get into silent stillness, you are in a place of no thought. And when you get in a place of no thought, you are into beingness. You're aware, but not thinking about being aware.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I hope that helps. It's a little, you know, the words get a little tricky sometimes.
this is making a
dent in an awareness that some people may not yet have had up to this point. And I made no claim that this is anything other than just my many years of doing what I am suggesting others do, and that is, you know, be attentive, ask for what you need, and follow your heart as to what the next step in your spiritual unfoldment journey is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if someone were interested in learning more about the mystery school you had mentioned, what are the resources available to them to garner that material and improve?
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked. I'm very reticent. I don't normally give a lot of contact information because I don't want anyone to feel like I'm an evangelist. I'm really not.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone is where they're supposed to be, and if they're not, they're going to seek anyway, and they'll seek anywhere to find that next step. So many of those, I'm listening to this call, may find, well, you know, this makes sense. So maybe I'd like to explore more about what the good doctor was sharing, you know, in this broadcast. So, first of all, it's open invitation, never solicitation, just open invitation. We have an excellent website that is free without any constraints and without any, quote-unquote, you know, requirements for joining or anything like that, just to get go to the banquet, or at least the buffet, and partake of the universal principles of truth that are never hidden. They just are in a place and space of time where everyone who wants them can get them, but they're not thrown out there just for, you know, know the old saying, pearls before swine. All that simply means is truth is a very powerful and extraordinary empowering principle of multiple principles.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to be prepared to receive them so that you can honor them with the recognition and appreciation they are deserving of. If someone were to tell you, here's everything you need to know about Christ consciousness, and then say, okay, well, let me get back to watching my TV show, and we can talk about that later. That tells you they're not ready for that. And so readiness and preparation is an inward journey. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is just remembering there's no rush. You don't have to feel like there's an urgent need to rediscover yourself. Just follow your heart. And if you follow your heart will lead you to certain people or certain situations or certain understandings, certain awarenesses, certain resources. Go back to the resources. So if you wanted to find out more about the Way of Truth, which is a spiritual organization, and it's an ancient mystery school, it just remodeled itself for modern times to make it more consumable for most people. Mystery schools go back thousands and thousands and thousands of years, including the mystery schools that Jesus and other masters of their particular teaching at the time went to and became proficient at. The mystery school goes back to ancient Greece and even beyond that or before that. But anyway, the website is The Way of Truth Mystery School. .org.
Mm-hmm.
The Way of Truth Mystery School. .org. Quite extensive, goes wide, goes way deep. You can spend a lot of time there and get well schooled on some of the principles I've shared with you today. And then for those who want to go into a little deeper read, we actually have two or three of our books on PDF format on a website that is readily available, no cost. That website is Open Heart Pub, as in publishing, openheartpub.com. That's where you can get access to a book entitled Discovery of Self, which is a good introductory primer on what it means to explore your higher identity. And also one of the books there that I consider the preeminent book, our Bible, quote unquote, is called The Way of Truth Eternal, Book 1. The Way of Truth Eternal, Book 1 is also in PDF format on that site. So The Way of Truth Eternal, Book 1 and Discovery of Self, maybe other books now have been put on their PDF format. That's Open Heart Pub. openheartpub.com. And then the other one for the more expansive understanding of the Mystery School and its teachings, thewayoftruthmysteryschool.org. So there you have a couple of excellent resources.
Okay, great. I just want to step back into, you did a Matthew 7:6, it says, give that not which is holy unto dogs, that neither cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and wring you. So you made that. Could you explain it in nice English terms for us, that term, that Matthew?
Yeah. And first of all, he was not referencing humans as swine. He was simply giving a precautionary warning that you don't give high truth to people who are not ready to receive it, because they'll trample it, or they'll ignore it, or they'll give it no justice in their understanding or their intention. Because attention and intention are everything that directs the course of your life and the course of your consciousness. Let me explain. Whatever you put your attention on, that's your mental focus, will amplify. It will increase like a magnifying glass. So the more you put your attention on anything, it's going to be, quote-unquote, more what was going to come in your direction, good or bad. Now, the other part of it is not just attention, but intention. Intention is attention directed in a particular way. So if your intention is to be godlike, then your attention will be on godlike attributes, or you will be exposing yourself to godness or goodliness at least, and you're also divesting yourself away from things that are not goodly or godly. Now, this is an important point, and it kind of goes back to the foundational principles, mental resilience. Can you be mentally resilient if you're constantly allowing media to expose you to things that are not goodly or godly? And I say this with all due appreciation. Media serves its purpose to inform. But far too many people spend far too much time listening to, watching things that are basically rehashing of all the negativity in the world. Now, see, negativity, in contrast to positive, has always existed. It's just that we weren't exposed to it 24/7 on the news cycle. So be careful that you don't allow your consciousness to be contaminated over and over and over again with every new broadcast and news cycle of CNN or CNBC or whatever your resource is. Yeah, it's good to know what's going on in the world. Spend, you know, a minute or two, 5 minutes, capturing the headlines of the day, and then get on with your life. Get on with spreading some love and light and not just repeating regurgitation and even vomiting up the negativity that's so rampant. Some people are just feasting on it. I mean, that's sad to say, but that's part of the problem we have now, is people are feasting on negativity. And there's a reason for that. You know, there's the godliness in the world and there's the ungodliness, and we can call that ungodliness by whatever name you want. I call it the adversary. And it will have its way as best it can to control the attention and the intention of anyone who allows themselves to be so influenced.
So the 2024 is said to be a banner year for disclosure of anything, especially the principles of love that you talked about, because if I were to go to the Bible and it says in Romans 13:8, owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. If we were to say what you have been saying throughout the past 40 or 50 minutes, is that love is the key, love is the answer, love is the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I guess it's said so much in so many different ways, it becomes like old news. People, it kind of goes in one ear and out the next, because it sounds like, of course, everybody knows love is the way. No. To know and not to do is not yet to know.
I see.
Yeah, that goes way back. I think that's one of those sayings that's tied to one of the religious teachings, but I don't know which. But in other words, don't fool yourself by thinking because you can quote a chapter and a verse that you have internalized the understanding of that principle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the media, the music industry, we give it due credit for some of the masterful works that have come out that speak to love, and there are emanations and frequencies of love, be they classical, be they, you know, modern day music, be they lyrics, be they songs with whatever. But don't let these things slip over your head. You know, when that group of four guys from Liverpool, England, started singing this song called Love Is All You Need, that was deep. That was real deep. And then Let It Be, which was another one of their renderings, Let It Be, allow things to be as they are. Just adjust your attitude, because you don't need to control anything other than your attitude. And then the late, great John Lennon, masterful work, Imagine. Can you imagine a world of peace and joy and love? Because, see, whatever you put your attention on is an imaginative process. And guess what? You can make the world better by simply imagining that it will be. And if enough people do that, then we start to change things because of the power of imagery, creating whatever is imagined. This is a very powerful principle. Anything that you look at, feel, touch, see, whether it's a car, whether it's a table, whether it's a building, whatever, was first pre-existent in someone's imagination. You can't have a creation without an imagination. So we can say God imagined the world and then the world manifests. Well, anything that you've ever done creatively, whether it's a work of art, poetry, music, or just rearranging the furniture in your house, was first done as an imaginative act. It's a very powerful, very important principle. And again, we can go back to just anything that inspires you, whether it's a word, a phrase, a speech, a musical piece, anything that gets your heart opening, that you feel good about hearing or listening or seeing or being around certain people who give you that feeling. That's where you want to put your attention and your time. Why put your attention and time on something that's not going to make you feel good? I mean, how many times do you want to listen to the evening news recycle over and over again? Or the bad vibes of the rap music with the cursing and all the bitterness that comes out of that. I'm not saying all rap is bad. I'm not saying all hip-hop is bad, but you have to be able to slice and dice and find the pearls amongst those because there aren't many of them.
Okay. You talked also about Matthew 7:7, where you say, ask and it shall be given, seek and it shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. How important is that to really take into your soul being about asking, mm-hmm. seeking, and knocking? Mm-hmm. Because in Matthew 7:8, yeah. It says, for everyone who asketh will receive, for everyone who seeketh will find, for everyone who asketh will be given. Go ahead.
Yes. The basic underlying principle there is that we are gifted amongst many, many things from our divine higher source. We call it God or universal source or whatever name you want to give it. We're gifted with many things. And one of the most precious gifts we're given is free will.
Okay.
Free will allows you to make your choices independent of any influence or any regulation or any force. There's no force. Because why would there be? If God is unconditional love, why would it force you to do anything, including think the right way? So you have free will. But that free will comes with a cost because your free will determines your actions and your reactions to that. So, yeah, you have free will. Now, we're going back to the point. Ask and you shall receive means I'm using my free will to ask for what I want. You know, you could say, okay, God's going to take care of me. Well, God can take care of you, but it's not going to interfere with your free will. And if you need help and you don't ask for it, whose fault was that? I'm not trying to make a joke out of something very serious, but we have to humble ourselves enough to ask for help when we need it, enough to ask for guidance. Now, the one thing about this is very, very impelling, a very compelling story to me, is that whatever you need, if you stay awake and aware, it's going to show up. You can ask for it, and it'll show up faster or more evidently. But it's out there all the time. It's just whether you're blind to it or not. Be very conscious and aware of coincidence. When things are happening, wow, what a coincidence. The right person, the right time, the right place, just at the, you know, the same instant that you were looking for or waiting for or needing something. So a great mind, one considerably greater intellect than mine, by the name of Albert Einstein, has this quote. He says, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous.
Yep. I remember that.
I believe that's deep.
Yeah, that is deep. That is deep. Okay. Well, I think we got a couple of minutes left. So what final comments would you make about the whole?
Sure. Well, I think I want to give as part of my closing, I want to give a couple of resources that have come my way.
Okay.
And these, unfortunately, are going to be at such a high level, you probably would have wanted to write them down, but maybe we can get them into some publication that can be made available to the listening audience. 7 cardinal rules for life. This one just kind of jumped off the shelf today. I hadn't even thought about it. 7 mm-hmm. cardinal rules for life. 1, make peace with your past so it won't disturb your present. 2, what other people think of you is none of your business. 3, time heals almost everything. 4, no one else is in charge of your happiness except you. 5, don't compare your life to others and don't judge them. You have no idea what their journey is all about. 6, stop thinking too much. It's okay to not know the answers. They will come to you when you least expect it. And 7, smile. You don't own all the problems in the world. So there you have that. Our time is probably running pretty thin, but I do have
Go ahead. You have time.
We can go? Okay.
Yeah, go.
Now, back in the day when I was first starting my journey, this is in the 60s, I came across a piece of prose, and I didn't even know at the time how meaningful it was going to be for me later. But I was so inspired by this piece of prose that I memorized it. And many of you may have seen it or heard it in some context. It's oftentimes printed up on, you know, a little poster ad or a little scribe, calligraphy kind of scribe or something. But the name of the prose, not really poetry, but prose, is Desiderata, which is a Latin term. Desiderata means things desired as essential, necessary things. And the author is a fellow by the name of Max Ehrlman. I think it came out in the 40s.
Okay.
So I'll read it, and probably Dr. Johnson, you may have heard of this before, but some of the listeners will have heard it. I'll just read it from start to finish. Go placidly amid the noise and the haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. As far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even to the dull and the ignorant. They, too, have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexations to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain or bitter. For always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself, especially do not feign or pretend affection. Neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all aridity and disenchantment, it is as perennial as the grass. Take kindly the counsel of the years, gracefully surrendering the things of youth. Nurture strength of spirit to shield you in sudden misfortune.
Thanks.
But do not distress yourself with dark imaginings. Many fears are born of fatigue and weariness. Beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here. And whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should. Therefore, be at peace with God, whatever you conceive him to be, and whatever your labors and aspirations, in the noisy confusion of life. Keep peace in your soul.
Thank you, Doctor.
That's one of those things you can't improve on. Just leave that alone.
Okay. Well, we've been listening to Dr. Matthew Silver. He's a physician, allopathic physician, family doctor, and also a metaphysician who's helping us to get prepared for the trauma or the light that's coming in 2024. You've been listening to lightsinthenight.org. I appreciate you listening, and I'll see you next week, same time, same place. Thank you, Doctor. Bye now.
Thank you.